Well, why would we do a series in the summer called Heroes? I think it's a fair question, if you had that question. I think there's something about escaping from the routine of life, so slowing the pace down in life, which sometimes happens during the summer. And it's interesting as we do that, as we escape the mundane of everyday life and allow our minds to drift. It's interesting where our minds drift. We just most naturally drift toward these summer blockbuster movies around heroes, right? I don't know if it's Wonder Woman for you. Maybe it is. For me, it's this movie right here. It's the Spider-Man movie. Anybody else excited about that? I am. Thank you. One person is. Peter Parker, what a very interesting character Peter Parker is, and what Spider-Man can do is incredible. Maybe in the past it's been this movie for you that has taken on so many forms, whether it was The Dark Knight or The Dark Knight Returns or even Batman versus Superman. There's something about the rescue the world, the battle to fight, the beauty to rescue that all of us just relate to, that we naturally start dreaming about. Maybe for you, it's not Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, or Transformers even. Maybe for you, it's Captain Underpants. Maybe that's what you're most excited about. In our house, we've got little kids. We've got an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and we are very excited about Captain Underpants in our house. We also have a child on the way, which is exciting for us. Don't applaud. I know, I get it at this point. After 3 kids, people, they don't congratulate you anymore. They just look at you like, what is wrong with you? You know, do you know how this happens? And the answer is we do. We are just in love, and my wife will not keep her hands off me. That's quite honestly the truth. And I can say that today because she is out of town and she's not here. So no, I don't know what it is for you, but we're all trying to answer that question: what is a hero? We're all rallying around this idea that, hey, maybe being a hero is not what we think it is. Maybe being a hero is not so much about having superhero powers. Maybe it's about something way more accessible than that. I would imagine one of the things that unites us all is that Most of us don't feel like a hero. I wouldn't imagine you woke up this morning thinking, yeah, I'm going to do something heroic today. In fact, whenever someone does something quite heroic in the news, whenever we interview them and say, hey, how do you feel? How did that happen? What was that that allowed you to do that? We even reluctantly take on that word. We push it away and say, no, I'm not a hero. In fact, what is the opposite of a hero? I don't think it's being a coward. It's really just being an average person. Being an average Joe, being an average Jolene, if you will, that all of us just, at some level, we're just reluctant. We feel like, you know what, if we were to become a hero, we're an unlikely hero. Because we all know how human we actually are. Just recently in the news, there was a story of a hero just after that tragic bombing at the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. There was a guy named Chris Parker who looks very different than Spider-Man, Batman. He's not what you would think of when you think of a hero. But he did something quite heroic. Just after this bomb went off, he was just outside of the arena, he heard the screaming, he saw the flash, and he ran into the arena. While everyone's pouring out, he ran back into the arena, just like Desmond Doss from Hacksaw Ridge. Ran inside and grabbed one lady who did not make it. Ran back inside, grabbed another young girl who had been injured in the legs. And as the story unfolds, it seems like that he may have just saved her life because of how courageous he was to go and carry her out. When the Manchester Evening Gazette, who took this photo of Chris Parker, when they asked him When they said, well, how does it feel to be a hero? He answered just like most of us would answer. He said, I'm supposed to be a hero, but I'm not a hero. I'm just a normal guy, just a normal, regular guy who ran into the arena that night all because I heard kids screaming. He went on to say, I did what anyone else would do. So what is a hero? What does it mean to be a hero today? I don't know about you, but I don't really want to be faced with that decision of having to run back into danger. So hopefully being a hero is more than just risking your life, though certainly people who risk their lives are heroic. But what does it look like for average people like you and me to be heroes? The word hero is an interesting word. The word comes from the Greek term for demigod. Demi meaning partial or not full, just a half of a god, which I think is a very interesting definition for what a hero is, that a hero is someone who doesn't have it all together, doesn't have it all figured out, is just doing the best that they can, someone who has just enough, and then somehow in some way, God allows people through this person to experience some kind of transcendent experience of God himself. See, I would imagine that girl that ran into Chris Parker, or Chris Parker ran into her, I would imagine that she looks at Chris Parker as an angel. I would imagine she felt like that God intervened on her behalf through him somehow. You probably have your own story to tell where someone did something heroic for you. And it's interesting that maybe we're all just demigods, not trying to become God, clearly, but maybe we have the opportunity to take what we have and offer it up and then somehow allow God to use it to allow other people to experience something that transcends life. See, I believe that the definition that I see in Chris Parker's life or in any moment of a hero is that heroes see what everyone else sees, but they choose to do what no one else does. There's this counterintuitive, this swimming upstream, this doing something a little bit different than most, which is what heroes seem to do. They see what others see, but somehow they're not content to do what everyone else does. No, they choose to do something different. And what I hope to discover today for all of us is that the most unlikely people make the most likely heroes. So if you feel unlikely today, I believe that the most unlikely people, they actually make quite likely heroes. And so just because you don't feel like a hero today doesn't mean that you don't have the potential to become one. Over the next several weeks, we're going to look at some more specific applications of what it would look like for us to be a hero for someone else. But I felt like there's really no other place to start than to figure out why is it that unlikely people make likely heroes. We're going to look at a character from history, a profile from history that everyone is aware of, no matter what your faith background is. Everyone knows the name Moses. Moses has had so many movies made about him, and it's interesting how Moses really was an unlikely person for God to choose. Moses was born during a time where Pharaoh had just issued a decree that every male, every firstborn, at the very least, was going to be sacrificed from these Israelite people. And so Moses' mom did something quite heroic. She actually put Moses as a baby in a basket, floated him down a river. Someone from Pharaoh's home, someone from Pharaoh's direct family actually found Moses, gave him a place, gave him a home, allowed him to be raised in Pharaoh's palace. And as Moses grew up, he had to be a little bit different than most because he had this background of being an Israelite, yet he grew up in an Egyptian home, in Pharaoh's palace itself. There was a moment when he became an adult where he saw someone being mistreated by one of the Egyptian commanders, and he killed this person. And because of the shame that he carried, because of the regret of his mistake, he did what so many people have had to do, and he went back home. And as I was reading through his story, I thought about people who have had to move back home. And maybe that's you today. Maybe you're having to live at home again, and you're not proud of it, you're not excited about it. Well, there's good news today. That didn't stop God from using Moses. In fact, God used Moses in some amazing ways. So we pick up the story in Exodus chapter 3. We're actually going to be using, during the series, we're going to be using the Bible app. So if you have the Bible app on your phone, it's amazing some of the different things that you can do, how accessible they've made this for us. And you're welcome to use this, or we're going to put some of this on the screen. But just this first part, I wanted to just read to you to just let some of the context sink in from Exodus 3. This is Exodus 3, verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And there was an angel of the Lord who appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. Now this has got to be fascinating for Moses, right? He sees this bush, and the bush seems like it's on fire, but the bush is not burning up. He probably felt like he was having some kind of opium-induced hallucination, right? Too much poppy seed in his bread, and now he's seeing things all of a sudden. This bush is lit, as you might say today, but this bush was not burning up. And so Moses did what anyone else would do. Moses thought, I love this, I will go over and I will see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up. And in doing so, Moses ended up having a conversation with God. God himself spoke to Moses through this burning bush. Verse 7, the Lord said to Moses, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. Let me just take a pause, just a moment, to say to those of you who maybe you relate to that, maybe you feel like you're suffering. Maybe you woke up today paralyzed with doubt or paralyzed with fear, maybe paralyzed by depression, and you feel like you've prayed and you've asked God to take it away or to intervene on your behalf, and you feel like that he's silent. I would imagine that many people, many of the Israelite people had prayed a prayer very similar to that. And for whatever reason, at this point, God had not moved on their behalf, but it didn't mean that God wasn't listening. It didn't mean that God wasn't paying attention. For me, I find a lot of comfort in the fact that God said to Moses, I have indeed seen the misery, and I have heard them crying out, and I am concerned about their suffering. You have a God today, I believe, who sees your suffering. He hears your cries, and he's concerned. And even though he hasn't done anything yet, doesn't mean he's not going to do anything. In this account, God continues in verse 10 and goes on and says, so now go, Moses, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. I would imagine that Moses, upon hearing that, after the shock and awe wore off of him talking to a burning bush, which had to be quite comical, I'm sure it's a great story to tell, right? Over the next few weeks, you're not going to believe this, Moses. We've already heard the burning bush story. No, I got to tell it one more time because this is crazy. What happened? Okay, we got it. And then what did God say to you, Moses? Yeah, he said, so now go. I want you to go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. That's exactly right. This is your moment, Moses. And I'm sure Moses stood there and thought, as crazy as this burning bush is, what you're asking me to do is even more crazy. And Moses' instinctive answer to God was, no, you got the wrong guy. Not in this tunic, not in this robe, I'm not going anywhere but Midian. Oh God, by the way, have you forgot? I'm living at home in my parents' basement playing World of Warcraft, eating loads of Doritos, okay? I'm not exactly training as a warrior here, okay? There's no waxing on and waxing off for me. I'm not doing any of that, God, and you want me to go? You gotta be kidding me. And so Moses, over the next few moments, it seems, gives God a number of excuses. And I find these excuses both very interesting, but also hilarious, and also very appropriately connected to the way I feel. And so we're gonna look at the excuses that Moses gives, but even more important are the responses that God gives Moses' excuses, because God has very unlikely responses to our quite likely reasoning. See, we're all unique, we're all different, we're all one of a kind, but a lot of the things that we feel are quite normal, and we're quite connected by some of the reasoning that we give. But God's responses to even Moses's reasoning, I think, can help give some of us a little bit of courage to become the hero that God may just be inviting us to become today. Here's the first excuse that Moses gives God in chapter 3, verse 11. Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" This wasn't necessarily an identity crisis for Moses. I don't think at this point he was looking for his ID, looking for his driver's license. I don't think he had forgotten his name or his identity. I think he was literally questioning, do I have what it takes? God, I'm not exactly at the prime of my life. Most people would say that things are kind of down and out for me. And God responds to Moses with something incredibly powerful and says, "I will be with you." Hey, Moses, I'm not all that concerned with whether or not you know who you are, because what's more important than that is that I will be with you. Maybe Moses thought, I don't have the position. I don't have the position that someone might need to take on such a calling, such an invitation, such a command. But I find God's response quite encouraging, because I believe that God's presence can overcome all of my imperfections. And I think the same thing can be true for you, that God's presence with us can actually overcome all of our imperfections, all the things wrong with me, all the things that I do not have. The next excuse Moses gives God, he says, "Well, God, suppose," which I love that word, "suppose, God," because I'm sure you haven't thought about this proposition. Let me throw out one that, God, you might have slipped your mind. You got a lot to take care of, right? So suppose I go to the Israelites. So not to the Egyptians anymore. Okay, forget the courage that I'm going to need to muster up to go stand in front of Pharaoh. But just think about the courage I'm going to need to muster up to go to my own people. Okay, suppose I were to go to the Israelites and say to them, I'm not even saying I'm going to do this, God. I'm just saying, hypothetical, okay? All right. Imagine, if you will, that I go to the Israelites and I say to them, "Well, the God of your fathers has sent me to you." I'm sure he had his moment of acting there, probably delivered quite an embellished line. Suppose I go and say, "The God of your fathers has sent me to you." And they ask me one simple question, God. I'm not talking high-level theology here. I'm talking one simple question. "Well, what is his name?" Then what shall I tell them? God, that question alone would stump me, okay? And God's answer to Moses is so profound and so powerful that, honestly, I approach it with quite a bit of trepidation, because I don't have the ability to be able to explain it with as much impact as it needs. I don't have the persuasion. I don't have the words. I don't have the intelligence to be able to explain this for all of what it's worth. But God, for the first time ever, tells his people, which is now passed down to us, his name and who he was to be referred by. And it's amazing what he says. God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. You just tell them, I am has sent me to you. Maybe the most beautiful definition of God that he could have given. I am? Yeah, I am. I am what? I am whatever you need me to be. I am a father to the fatherless. I am an encourager to the down and out. I am a friend to the lonely. I am strength for the powerless. I am hope for the hopeless. I am a deliverer for those who are in bondage. I am exactly who you need me to be. Maybe Moses thought, I don't have the power to do what you're asking me to do. But it's as if God is saying to Moses, knowing I am is worth far more than knowing I'm not. And what about for you? I mean, what do you focus on more? Your weaknesses or your strengths? Probably your weaknesses. I know I do. I'm quite well aware of my weaknesses. I don't know that I'm all too aware of my strengths. But it's as if God is telling Moses, hey, it is very dangerous to think more highly than you ought to, but it's also more pretty dangerous to think more low of yourself than you should. And he didn't tell Moses, no, you do have weaknesses, so I want you to go take an assessment, go buy a book, go to the Barnes & Noble self-help section, which is fantastic, or whatever your local bookstore is, and I want you to learn your strengths. No, he doesn't say that. He says, yeah, you're right, you don't have a lot of power, but that doesn't stop me from asking you or inviting you or commanding you to step into this calling that I've put in front of you, because I am. I'm who you're not. I'm who you need me to be. I am everything you need. He says, you just focus on that and you worry a little bit less about what you're not. I know all about what you're not, but I want you to know all about the I am. The next excuse Moses gives God, he says, well, what if they don't believe me? And that's a beautiful statement, God, I am that I am. But what if they don't believe me or even listen to me? And what if they say, God, the Lord did not really appear to you? And then what God did was fascinating and alarming to some, but he took what was in Moses' hand. He said, Moses, what's in your hand? Moses said, well, it's a staff. And through this staff, over the next several years, God would explain, God would display, God would show Moses his power through this staff. He said, okay, you're correct, Moses, that's the staff. Great job, throw it on the ground. He throws it on the ground and it turns into a snake, which at that point, I would have ran as fast as my little Birkenstocks could have run, right? I mean, would have sprinted in the opposite direction. I don't know what your greatest fear is. For me, it probably is a snake. Maybe for you, God would have said, throw that staff on the ground. It would have turned into a spider. I don't know. Maybe for some of you, it would have turned into a toddler. And you would have thought, oh my goodness, I'm out of here. I don't know what it was, but for you, but I know for Moses, it seemed to be something that brought fear in him. And then God tells him, now pick up the snake. And so Moses reached down, and we don't know how long that exchange would have been. For me, I would have been like, I need more than that. What do you mean pick it up? Tell me what's going to happen when I do. But there was none of that. All we know is Moses picks up the snake, and it turns back into a staff. Just a simple explanation from God to Moses as to who has the power. Moses, for whatever reason, felt like he didn't have the position. He didn't have the power. But it seems like he's also saying to God, I don't have the skills. God, I'm not a leader. I'm not an out front kind of person. I'm kind of behind the scenes. I don't know that I have the organizational ability to be able to do what you think I need to do, what you're asking me to do. But let me just ask you, if you feel that way today, if you feel like, well, I don't have the position or the power or the skills, let me ask you this question. If God is not concerned with what I can't do, should I be? If God's not concerned about what I can't do, should I be concerned about it? Rhetorical question. I think the answer is no, not really. He's not surprised by it, but he doesn't seem concerned by it. God knows your limits, your limitations, your weaknesses. So Moses' next response, he says, well, Lord, pardon your servant, Lord, which I love this because at this point he's going, I don't know a lot about you, God, but if you were the kind of person that would get agitated, you're probably agitated now, but pardon me. He says, but I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant, which I love that. No, we've noticed, Moses, this is not the I have a dream of speeches, let's just say, okay? No one's comparing this to the Gettysburg Address. No, you're right. You don't seem that eloquent or that quick of speech. He says, no, I'm actually slow of speech and of tongue. I don't speak good, God, right? And I love God's response to him. He asks him some very penetrating, very revealing questions. The Lord said to him, well, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who is it that gives sight to people or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Am I not the one that has actually put the mouth on you in the first place? Am I not the one who has put the instrument of voice inside of you? Now go, and I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. Moses seems like was saying, God, I don't have the position, I don't have the power, I don't have the skills, and I definitely don't have the words. And God's going, and I'm not surprised by any of that. I know you don't have the position, the power, the skills, or the words, but I want to let you know that your weaknesses, they're not actually weaknesses like you think of them. No, see, your weaknesses set the stage, set the best stage for God's strength. If God wanted someone without weaknesses, he would have chosen Bruce Wayne and not you or not me. But he says, no, I know that you have weaknesses, but that's why I have chosen you, because I want to make your weaknesses a stage for my strength and my greatness. And the same thing is true for you. God is, I believe, asking you today, will you step up and step out and become a hero? But he's not asking you and me to be a hero because he's impressed with us. No, it's because he wants to put himself on display. Moses wraps up the whole thing, which I love, and he says, pardon your servant, Lord, one more time, but would you please send someone else? God, last try. Anyone else? I mean, you seem like you can look to and fro across the whole world, which is flat at this point, but will eventually become round. But do you mind looking around and just seeing if there's anyone else that might fit the bill? Because Moses did not have the position, the power, the skills, or the words to be a hero, but none of that was an obstacle for God. And it's not an obstacle for God in choosing you either. God is not asking you to step out to be a hero because of your position or your power or your skills or your words. Those are really the pillars of what it means to be successful in the professional world, isn't it? But that's not the secret ingredient to being successful in God's economy. No, God doesn't actually need your position or your power or your skills or your words or your lack thereof. No, Moses had something that was far better than any of that. And the amazing thing is that you and I, we have it as well. Moses, he wasn't eloquent, but he was available. He didn't have it all together, but Moses was willing, and you too can choose to be willing. Right where you are, right here today, you can hold your hands out before God and say, God, I don't know what this is going to look like because I don't have a lot going for me, but if you would like to use me, I'm willing. And I just wonder what what kind of form your life would take on if that became a prayer for you on a regular basis. Despite what you believe or don't believe about God, what if you just opened up your hands and said, God, if you would like to use my life, I just want to let you know I'm willing. I believe that every single one of us is going to be asked at some point in our life to step out and to step up to do something that someone else might deem as heroic. It may even be simple for you. It probably will be simple for you. It might mean smiling at someone. It might mean going across the room and having a conversation with someone. It might mean showing someone a little extra patience, showing someone a little extra kindness, asking someone a question about their life. It might mean bringing 6 pounds of food to a food drive. I don't know what it might be for you. I just know that it's not go save the world. No, it's God, here's what I have. Just like that boy that came to Jesus and said, God, I don't know if you can use this or not. It's a Happy Meal from Long John Silver's. It's a couple pieces of bread and a little bit of fish. Can you do anything with it? And God goes, willingness. Yeah, I actually can do a lot with that. See, it's when we close our fists and say, God, no, not me, never, no way, that it seems like God moves on and says, well, then I will find someone else. But I'm just telling you, the resume of the person used by God is quite unlikely. And if you feel like an unlikely hero, you're more than likely someone God would choose to use. If you feel like an unlikely hero, you're more than likely someone that God would choose to use. So please do not write yourself off. God hasn't written you off. I don't care how bad your background is, how messed up your past is. God's going, hey, if you hold your life out and say, I'm willing, God, I'm available. God, if you would like to use me, I'm in. That's the kind of prayer that God seems to answer. He certainly did in Moses' case. He certainly did with Chris Parker. And he can do it with you as well. I struggle with a sermon like this because there's not any specific application. But I'm trusting that over the next few days that you will know. Because heroes see what everyone else sees, but they're not content to do what everyone else does. Heroes see the world in a very similar way to the way other people see the world, but for whatever reason, they open their hands up to God and say, God, I am willing for you to ask me to do what not everyone else does. So as we close today, what I would love to do is I would love to just invite you to pray a prayer very similar to that, and maybe even physically open up your hands and offer your hands to God, unless you're operating a motor vehicle, which I would ask you to not do. But I would invite you as we pray to open up your hands and say, God, I don't know what this looks like. And God, there's a lot of fear in me, and there's certainly a lot of insecurity in me, but God, I don't want to live my life not knowing the thrill of being a hero for you. I don't want my whole life to pass me up and miss out on what it might look like for me to use the little that I have to help someone else experience you in a transcendent kind of way. God, I don't want to miss out on what it might look like for me to allow someone else to see you in me. I think we can all agree that this world needs a few more heroes. And maybe, just maybe, God's asking you to be one of them. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we, just as a symbol of availability and willingness, God, we just open up our hands and say, God, I don't know what this means. I don't know what you may ask. I don't know what your invitation, what your command may be. But God, if you would like to use me, I'm in. God, as grand as it might be, as small as it might be, God, I don't want to miss out. I don't want to live this whole life never experiencing the thrill of you crafting a blockbuster summer movie in my life. So God, we just invite you and we ask you to make it clear to us. God, over the next few weeks, God, I pray that you would use this series in massive ways in people's lives. Not for our benefit, but for the benefit of others. And God, we want to do what great heroes do, and we want to give you all of the credit and all of the honor and all of the glory, God, in every single situation, because it's certainly not us. Thank you for Moses and just the incredible example of his life. But God, more than that, thank you for Jesus. Thank you for his willingness to go to the cross and do the unthinkable, and for giving him the power, God, to be able to defeat death so that we even have hope today. And we pray all of this in his name. Amen. Hey, thank you so much for being here today. I hope you have a great rest of your Sunday. Hang out with us for a little while. We're going to be here for a while. Happy summer. And we'll see you on social media this week, or we'll see you back here next week for part 2. Thanks.